All right, we are in Revelation chapter 8. And we are dealing with the trumpet judgments. Remember, we had the first series, the seals. And the seventh seal is really the beginning of the seven trumpets. The trumpets evidently within the seven seals, and then the seventh trumpet will sound, and the seven bowl judgments within that one. The one we looked at before was in verse 7, and the angel sounded, and there was hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and a third part of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. And now we get to verse 8, and the second angel sounded, and it was a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and a third part of the sea became blood. And a third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and a third part of the ships were destroyed. Now, if we take this at face value and look at it, it sounds very much like this sort of a thing. We know from satellite imagery, and some of them are very plain to see. You don't need the satellite imagery. I've done did a picture of the big crater that is near Winslow, Arizona, that's over a mile across. And the people who homesteaded that site actually mined the meteorite for years, and that's where their wealth came from. And of course, the meteorite is now gone, but you have this gigantic crater that's over a mile in diameter. There are other craters that are older, that are scores of miles across. And so we know that there have been impacts on this earth in the past. And I believe that it's kind of interesting. You'll see in the news once in a while that there's going to be a meteorite. And it's going to pass within so many tens of thousands of miles of Earth, you know, and some people begin to sweat and panic and everything else, as if we could do anything about it. If we were to have something even as big as this room impact the Earth, that would have a great many consequences. It isn't just a bang and wiping out the stuff that's within a certain circumference of that. The impact creates a shock wave and a number of other things. Now, if you have something, he describes it the size of, resembles a mountain. I should have looked up how much cubic material was blown out of Mount St. Helens, but it was over a cubic mile of stuff. If you had something that size falling from space and impacting the earth. Now the implication is, the indication is here in this passage that it hits the sea. Cast into the sea, and a third part of the sea became blood, and a third part of the creatures which were in the sea died, and then a third part of the ships were destroyed. I don't think this is 1, 2, 3, okay, you're out, 1, 2, 3, you're out, 1, 2. I think that this is geographical, that it's going to wipe out everything in, my suspicion is, the Pacific. And the reason I think it's the Pacific as opposed to the Atlantic or something else is the realm of the Antichrist, the nations that are involved that we're going to be seeing here, the things that we see in the scripture, that those nations still need to be operating. And if we were to have a Pacific impact, it's going to take out everything that's around the Pacific Rim. So you deal with New Zealand, Australia, Japan, Korea, China, and probably a substantial part of the Western Hemisphere. But you still have Europe and the Middle East and so on, I won't say unaffected, but not affected nearly as much. And so the nations that would be surrounding the Pacific would be the ones that would be most affected by such a thing. That, I'm inclined to think that that's probably where it is. It is, again, some conjecture there. One of the commentators said that it was the Mediterranean. And let me back this. When we deal with, in your Old Testament especially, but the Bible in general, when it talks about the sea, now place yourself in Israel, say during the time of David. when the Psalms were written. And Israel is this little strip of land on the far eastern edge of the Mediterranean. You have the Dead Sea, which is a lake, and you can see across it. It's a decent sized body of water, but it's not huge. The Sea of Galilee is a lake. It's bigger than Lake Taps, but it's not huge, gigantic, enormous. You can see across it, from top to bottom and east to west. So the sea, from the perspective of an ancient Israel, is the Mediterranean. If you stand on the shore of Israel today and look out to the west, if it's clear, you can see the island of Cyprus over here. But if you're looking straight west, you don't see, you see a horizon. It's a big body of water. And the ancient Israelites, as far as they knew, it just kept going and going and going. They knew that there were islands and other places out there. The Phoenicians were just up there on the coast coast of what is now Lebanon. You had Tyre and Sidon that are mentioned repeatedly in the Old Testament, as well as the New. Those were seafaring peoples, and they went to Cyprus and Greece and Africa and Italy and even as far as Spain. If you get to the far end of the Mediterranean, it comes down to a little narrow gap and then opens out, and that's where Gibraltar is. And then it just opens up into the Atlantic. But the Atlantic, for the most part, was unknown to the people in the eastern part of the Mediterranean. The sea for them was the Mediterranean. But if we're dealing with just the Mediterranean, as far as the descriptions and so on here are concerned, it leaves the rest of the world largely alone. I don't think that that's the case. And one of the reasons, number one, is the judgments are supposed to be falling on the earth. And then also, the first one sounded, and it says it was cast to the earth, and a third part of the trees were burned up. All green grass was burned up. That one seems to be a universal judgment. And the judgments that are described before seem to be universal. They're not local in their effect and so on. They are worldwide. And I also think that if you were to have a meteorite that is going to be big enough to wipe out a third of what's in the Mediterranean, and it were to land in the Mediterranean, I think its effect would be far greater than what we have as far as a local effect is concerned. I think we're dealing with something worldwide. And that's why I'm thinking it's much more likely to be the Pacific. And in part also, if you were to have a meteorite that's big enough to affect a third of the Mediterranean, it's also going to have some serious, serious effect to Israel itself. And so again, I think this would be on the opposite side of the world from there. It says that a third of the waters became blood. It's kind of funny. When you really read commentaries on Revelation, if you just have a vivid imagination, you can write a commentary on Revelation. I think this means this, that the sea is world government, or it's the realm of the Antichrist, and I think that this means this. And this, why don't you just let it say what it says? That we have a burning mountain fall out of the sky, lands in the sea, and does this and this and this and this. Now, the blood. Is it possible that God in his power actually turns it to blood? Yes. Yes. Is that required? Maybe. Maybe not. If we were to go back to the book of Exodus, what was the first of the 10 plagues on the land of Egypt? Moses took the rod and the Nile became blood. And all the ponds and all the open water became blood. They had to dig for drinking water. The Egyptians did. But it only lasted for a certain amount of time, and then it went away. Either the Nile kept, the flow of the Nile pushed it out into the Mediterranean, or whatever the case may be, but it only had a window of time that it lasted.
That seemed to be literal blood.
It says the same thing there as it does here. It says blood. It says the fish died. Now, let's look at a couple of options. I've got a couple of things okay, the water turns red. Are there other phenomena that turn the water? By the way, I'm not discounting the possibility that it is actually blood. God in his power and so on could do that. But he is, seems to be using, for the most part, natural phenomena to bring about the judgments that we're seeing in most of these places in the book of Revelation. And so if we have this this mountain and the waters are reddened, it could be that there was a chemical that was part of the makeup of this this meteorite that created that effect in the water. It's possible. How many have heard of red tide? Yeah. Red tide is an interesting phenomena. That is red tide. Red tide is a type of algae bloom, and it is toxic to all kinds of things. It kills fish, it kills all kinds of things. And they get these on the Gulf Coast, sometimes the warmer waters of along the Carolinas and Georgia and so forth. If you were to have a burning mountain with fire and its impact causes a whole bunch of disturbance, stirs up nutrients, and then also raises the water temperatures, you can have a big shift and a big change, and you can have it in short order. It could be something like that. The blood is the idea also of, it's a metaphor for death, violence, the shedding of blood. In Exodus 7, verses 14 through 22, and of course that's the first plague on Egypt, it rendered the water undrinkable, and whatever lived in the water died. Now the result of this, another result of this, besides the water turning to blood, is that everything in the sea died. This is an actual photograph. Those are all fish. Periodically, sometimes it's due to a chemical spill. Sometimes they have no idea why. You'll have a fish die off. And I've seen a few places where you've got, I mean, thousands and thousands of dead fish just floating there. Sometimes they're all the same kind of fish. But here we have everything that is alive dies. So it isn't just the fish, it's all the creepy crawlers on the bottom and all the other stuff that's along there. Everything dies. And so the idea, I think, is that there's something toxic in this meteorite, or it creates a toxin by its impact and somehow with the earth, and it does this. And so it could be that the sea life was poisoned. It could be that it raised the sea temperatures, and the stuff was cooked. When I was a kid, we had the Rouge River running through my town. The Rouge River is when it gets down to where it dumps into the Detroit River. That's where Detroit's Rouge plant is located. That was for decades the biggest factory in the world. Did a field trip there when I was in sixth grade and saw Mustang IIs being made. I know, one of the disastrous cars of Detroit's history. The Rouge River is, where it's going through my town, most of the time it's maybe 20, 25 feet wide at the most, and you can wade across it. It's not real big. They dammed it up and made a lake ages ago, probably before my time. And when I was in... Oh, probably sixth grade. They drained the lake and then bulldozed a bunch of stuff to deepen the lake and change a number of things because it was shallow and it was stunk during the summer and things like that. So they were trying to fix some things. They took all the scrapings and made a little island out there in the middle where all the swans and geese and stuff could lay their eggs in the summertime. It was all pretty and everything. But what they did, when they did this, the bottom of the lake was uneven. And there were several pools about the size of this auditorium or smaller. And the fish that were in the lake collected in these things. And come July and August, the water temperatures crept up because there was absolutely no inflow. It was just, and the water got hot. And of course, when the water got hot, pretty soon you see all these fish coming up to the surface. And then pretty soon all the fish are floating. And so if you have the temperatures rise, you could have that big die-off. And also, how many of you are familiar with fishing with dynamite? Anybody familiar with that? Okay, a number of you. it's illegal, at least in this country. But if you go out if you're out on a boat and you're in a lake, you can light a stick of dynamite, toss it out there, and if it impacts just above the water, make sure you put your fingers in your ears. But that explosion, that concussion, if you, after that explodes, you wait a little while, and all kinds of fish start floating to the surface. They're not necessarily dead, they're stunned. Now some of them might be dead, but they're, and, hey, tell you what, if you're in a big hurry, and you can get out there, boy, you can get a lot of fish in just a little bit of time. Go out there with your net, boy, you can fill that boat up. It could be any number of these things. I'm personally inclined to think that it was something toxic that did that. And then the ships in the sea, a third of the ships, those that were there in that sea, perished. The shockwave, the tidal surge, could be any number of things. But a third of the ships, of the world were destroyed. Those that were in that body of water that suffered the impact. By the way, any questions or anything on this so far? Yes, sir. It could be, but it comes down. It doesn't.
What is the word for cast, I guess?
Pardon me?
For cast.
Throw. I mean, Jeff, you can double check that on your app. These, by the way, those of you who are interested in getting the Concordance of the Vines Dictionary, both of those are public domain, and you can find those online. Me personally, I do prefer to just. Either I've got a computer program, but I also do like to, you know, do this number. With the Scripture Truth Order that we're looking at doing, those are, I believe, available through them. All right, Jeff, when you find that, let me know.
Primary verb to throw in various applications were less violent or intense.
All right. So pretty much what you get in English is the, you know, going to chuck something there. The next one is very similar. The next one is very similar, but has a different effect. It says in verse 10, and a third angel sounded, and there was a great star from heaven burning as it were a lamp. Now, I've mentioned... there's the... this was... the effect of some of the ships from the tsunami there in Japan doesn't take a whole lot necessarily to move some big ships if the water's moving right. All right, there are basically two types of things that are flying around out there in space, moving around out there that we have the potential of seeing here from the earth or actually striking the earth. We mentioned this before with one of the other things that's going to happen, that meteors are not just an ongoing thing. Shooting stars all the time. The vast majority is just, and then it burns up in the atmosphere. Hits the earth's atmosphere, burns up instantly. And we get a little bit of cosmic dust that comes down, but we never notice anything. All right. I asked, how many of you have ever seen a fireball? Okay. I've actually seen two of them in my life, but I remember one when I was a kid in particular. It's one that's, I actually saw it during the day. It was that big. I don't remember whether it landed or not. You get one that's sizable. That's very unusual. Most of the ones that land, they'll occasionally make the news, and they're something little. I heard about one crashing through someone's house, landed in their bathroom. They heard this big noise and everything, and they went in there, and there was broken tiles and stuff all over the place. And then they noticed there was this little rock in the corner, and there was a hole in the ceiling, and it was a meteorite. It was only about this big. And I mentioned that I had a cousin that had one about the size of a lady's shoe that fell in their backyard. That was pretty substantial. You can go on eBay and buy meteorites. They're fairly expensive. But most of them are, you know, like this big or so on. Went to Cranbrook Institute of Science. I think I shared this with you. And they had one that was, I think, wider than I can reach. Great big huge one. You go to some of the major museums around around the world, New York, the Smithsonian, and so forth, and they usually have a sizable meteorite or two or three on display. But we know, again, from the past that some of these things were quite large that have struck the Earth. Is there something else that's flying around out there that could possibly impact the Earth? Well, satellites. Satellites have landed. Did you see that thing that landed near Saginaw, Michigan this past week? One of Sony's things crashed in someone's backyard in Saginaw, Michigan. It was in pretty good shape. I mean, they could go and they could read stuff on it and know who to contact. You know, says, you know, if you find this in your backyard, please call this number here. an asteroid, its chemical makeup, most meteorites are iron and nickel, but they can't be made out of other things. And they would be, if they come into Earth's atmosphere and get caught, or come into Earth's gravitational pull, they come in through, that would be like a shooting star. That would be a meteor or a meteorite. Is there something else that's out there?
Comets.
Some of you remember, in my life, I got up in the middle, in the wee earlies of the morning. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever, when I was in seminary. And I actually got up there and I got out my telescope and I looked at Halley's Comet. And it was like, and I got my brother up because he wanted to see it if I was able to spot it. We both looked and said, okay, now we see it. Let's go back to bed because it was no big deal. See this line of stars over here? It's that one over there. And with the telescope, you could tell that's the one because it's got a little bump on its side. That was it. It was not very impressive when it came through. Now, in the past, it's been much closer and much, much brighter. How many of you remember Hale-Bopp though? That was impressive. You go out there and you look up and it was, I'm trying to get my bearings. It was just a little bit north of west. And it lit up the sky. It was this huge thing. And it was around for quite a while, but it was impressive. I've never seen, it's the only thing I've seen like that in my lifetime. There have been a number of other comets that that lit up the sky. There's been some that recorded that for a day or two it was quite bright outside at night because of the comet. Now, comets are made not of stone for the most part. All right, you know what comets? Yeah, they're mostly ice. At least that's the conjecture. I suspect that there's a number of other things. And you know, they still don't know exactly where these things came from or why they do what they do. Not entirely.
It doesn't have to be water ice either.
Yeah, I mean, it could, yeah. So, and by the way, the impact there, some of the impacts they think could possibly be comet. That's a possibility for this here. Because, it says, this one does something unusual, which makes me think that this thing is not going to strike the Earth per se. It's going to hit the atmosphere and break up and cause an effect by the particulate matter or the gases that permeate the atmosphere. It says, the third angel sounded and there was a great star from heaven burning as it were a lamp. It's bright. It's bright. A comet is bright. And it fell upon a third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of water. It's affecting the fresh water. This thing evidently is over land, not over sea, because we don't have the rivers and stuff over the sea. It's over land, and it affects the waters, though. So what's it doing to the waters? It says, and the name of the star was called Wormwood. This is very interesting. That's a wormwood plant. It's got dew on it to make it look really pretty and everything. Absinthe is the same thing. It's sometimes used as a flavoring juice. It's actually used to flavor some liquors. The word vermouth may be coming from wormwood, the German connection there. But there's a French liquor that's flavored with this stuff. The word for wormwood is used 7 different times in the Old Testament, but only once in the New Testament, and that's here. So 7 times in the Old Testament, 1 in the New, and that's here. It's kind of funny. If some of the things we use for flavoring, and we really appreciate them as flavoring, if you eat them straight, oh my word. It's like the little kid, hey, You want to taste some vanilla? You only do that once. This stuff is bitter, extremely bitter. And it is used symbolically in the Old Testament as for sorrow and judgment, because the idea of bitterness of life or sorrow of heart, wormwood is used in conjunction with that. It's you say, well, what's that? What does that really? It's in the same genus as sagebrush. Tarragon is also in the same genus, by the way. It grows in very dry areas, not desert, but very dry places like sagebrush does. And it's found in the drier parts of the Mediterranean world. But it is grown as a flavoring in some places. But the idea there is bitterness, that it's just horribly bitter to taste. When I was in high school, how many know what burdock is? Some of you know what burdock, okay. Burdock is a burr about this big, grows on a plant, and, it's actually where the guy got the idea for Velcro. With burdocks, alright. When I was a kid, we'd go through places and you'd be pulling them off of yourself, and you gotta make sure that you wad them up in little balls and have them stick to each other and toss them over someplace where you don't want more burdocks, or where it doesn't matter. And we had we were cutting down. Burdock grows in a really rich soil. We don't have a whole lot of it around here. It grows in really rich soil. So in an old barnyard or a manure pile or something like that. And my dad had a place where the burdocks were as tall as people. Usually they're about knee high. And he had some burdocks that were as tall as people. And he wanted those things cut down while they were still green. So we went through there and we got the heavy duty grass whip that's got a connection on both ends. The same one we used at your place for whacking blackberries. And we get through there, it's like a golf club, and we come up to one of those things, it's got a trunk on it about like this, but it's all juicy and that kind of thing. And we just swing back and whack that thing down. We actually had a lot of fun doing it. But we ended up with burdock juice all over our hands. And it wasn't sticky or anything, it was just, you know, we're hauling the things, grabbing them and putting them out of the way and everything. And then we do this number. Oh, it was awful. Okay, I suspect, never having tasted wormwood, it's a lot probably like burdock juice. Not something I'd recommend tasting. But it's exceedingly bitter. I mean, it's a memorable thing. Just horribly, horribly bitter. And the name of the star was called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood. The idea is they became bitter. And it says that many men died of the waters that were made bitter. So this is the plant that is used to symbolize that, but it's the idea that it's just exceedingly bitter, but the effect instead of is just not just taste, because this is not toxic, just taste awful. But what it does. Now, some of you may remember this fella. This is the same guy, it's a before and after. He was a former KGB agent that had found asylum in England, and the Russians weren't real keen on him, so they put some radioactive material in his tea. And this is what he looked like before he had the tea, and the other one is what he looked like about a week or two after he had the tea. And he's suffering from radiation poisoning, and he did die. It's possible that we're talking about radioactivity. It could be something chemical, we don't know. But we do know that the waters that are affected, a third of the waters, and by the way, each of these things here is a third, and the next one they'll be looking at next week is also a third. And again, I think this is geographical, that it's a third of the earth that is affected by this. But whatever it is, it's toxic, and those that drink it, this guy got it in his tea, will die as a result of this. So, two of these things, one is the mountain that falls, the other one is a bright burning star. By the way, a star is not necessarily what we astronomically consider a star. It's something that's out there, the evening star, some heavenly body that's out there. Two things in succession fall to the earth and have a great effect on the earth by what takes place. One of them wiping out everything that's in one of the oceans. And the other one wiping out or rendering toxic the fresh water, the flowing fresh water that's on a third of the earth. All right? Any additional questions or comments on this? Yes? I think that some of these are cause and effect. I'll give you an example of this. Let's go back to Exodus. And again, some of these run parallel to the plagues on Egypt. By the way, when we get to the two witnesses, my personal view is that we are dealing with Elijah and Moses, and the reason I believe that is because a lot of the things that they do are the same things that Moses and Elijah did with their judgments that God used them to bring. Okay, first plague, chapter 7 of Exodus. And again, we're dealing with a natural succession, but this is, of course, in the providence of God, because God said, okay, this is going to happen, and then it does. God causes these things to be. God very often, matter of fact, most of the time, we don't see a lot of overt miracles in the Bible. We see God in his providence taking things and using them for his purposes. All right, so first one, we have the plague of the blood. And what happens as a result? The people can't drink the water and the fish die. Okay? What's the next one?
Frogs.
Now, what would cause an explosion of the frogs? When I was a kid, we used to go to a particular pond not real far from my house, and they had probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of tadpoles in this pond. Now, the vast majority of those got gobbled up by other things, or caught by little boys, before they had a chance to turn into frogs. But let's say the predators, the fish that were in the Nile, all died. And so all the tadpoles survived and turned into frogs. What are you going to have? You're going to have a plague of frogs. All right? So one is the consequence of the other. Then we have lice and flies, and again, not the flies. What did they do with the frogs? Dumbest thing. If a frog dies, let's say in Egypt where it's hot and dry, what happens to a frog when it dies? Okay, it turns into this little crispy frog chip. Okay, just leave it there. Little piece of frog jerky. Let it sit there. It may last for a long time, but it's not bothering anybody. It's just there. But instead, the Egyptians took these things in wheelbarrows and wagons and who knows whatever and made giant heaps of them. And it says, and the land stank. Well, if I've got a pile of carrion, a pile of frogs the size of a car or a building, all the flies are going to go, woohoo! And after the flies have run through their life cycle, which doesn't take a whole lot of time, you're going to have a bazillion flies. Or again, the plague of the frogs, the plague on the Nile, then results in the plague of the frogs, which results in the plague of the flies. And by the way, the word lice is the idea of, well, anyway, flies. Some of the other ones, not necessarily a connection. The boils and so on. Then we get to verse 13, hail. Now, hail is frozen water, okay? Okay? Water in the hail in Egypt is gonna be really impressive. It's gonna break and smash things, but it's not gonna linger real long. Alright? When it melts, it's going to seep down into the soil. And the next one that follows the hail, chapter 10 is the locust. Now, they had a locust plague recently, over there in Africa. What causes locust plagues? Now I know there's about 7 or 8 different species of grasshopper, and they have a particular life cycle, and they have a certain behavioral pattern, and these grasshoppers become locusts. I understand that. But there's something that happens that creates a locust swarm. What?
A wet season.
You have to have a wet season. What you do is during the wet season, you got lots of grass. And because you got lots of grass, you got lots of grasshoppers. And so the grasshoppers multiply and they all lay their eggs. And then we have a dry season or two, and grasshopper eggs can last for several years in the ground. But so you had a wet season, maybe you had two wet seasons, and so you got lots and lots of eggs in the ground. A couple of years go by, and then you have a lot of rain. And all the eggs hatch at the same time, and there's plenty of grass for them to eat, and they reach a certain stage so that they've grown their wings, and then they run out of grass. And because they've got wings, they can fly. And they form these gigantic swarms and they go to find more grass. All right, that's where locust swarms come from. The hail melts. When that goes down in, grass grows and grasshopper eggs hatch. And so as a result, we have the hail. So these things are successive because one plague facilitates another. Now again, this is God working through these things, and a number of things we skipped over because that's God saying, okay, now I'm going to do this, and now I'm going to do this, and because this happened, I'm going to have this happen too. And I think that a lot of these things in Revelation are cause and effect for these things as well. Not necessarily. But some of them are going to come in succession because when you have this happen, then you have this happen. I think some of them do. I think, for example, when you read the plagues here in Exodus, you know, when you read these things as a kid, or you're watching Charlton Heston do this, you always assume that maybe a week went by and now we're going to hit you again. But these things were probably spaced out over a calendar year. Possibly even longer, but probably a calendar year. And one of the reasons for that is each one of these plagues on the land of Egypt in the book of Exodus is an attack on a particular Egyptian deity. And of course, just like the Roman Catholic calendar, you have different feast days and so on. And in paganism in general, you have different feast days for the different gods. So again, a calendar year to make sure we're gonna stick our finger in the eye of each of these 10 deities. In Revelation, we're not dealing with paganism per se. Instead, what we're dealing with is judgments on the earth because of man's sin. This is the wrath of God being poured out on humanity. And so I think that because of the duration of of these things, when we looked at the seals, I think that the seals are going to be taking place over a period of at least a year. Because we have the war, the death, and everything, and then the famine. All right, so we're dealing with at least one crop cycle in order to create this scenario. On the heels of that, then we start dealing with the supernatural things that are going to intervene and create even more mayhem and chaos. And so I think that these things, when I say quick succession, it's possible that they are weeks or months apart. But I don't think we're stretching it beyond that. I don't think there's enough time to catch your breath and recuperate from one before the next one hits. And some of them are going to be cause and effect so that they're going to be in quick succession. Okay, anything else? And by the way, also, my personal view, most likely, again, I'm not going to be dogmatic on this, is that what we have seen so far is still the first half of the tribulation. We have several insets that are explanations along the way. All right, the 144,000, that was the first one. We're going to deal with the two witnesses. We're going to deal with the Antichrist. All right, I think the two witnesses are in operation. Their ministry lasts during the first half because who bumps them off? Who kills them? The Antichrist. But the Antichrist does not reveal himself for who he is until the halfway point through the tribulation. So he's not revealed until chapter 13. So I think everything up through chapter 13 is actually events in the first half. And it's 13 after that's the second half. Anything else? All right, let's close in prayer. Father, thank you. Father, you are a just God, and you are a holy God. And Father, all the things that we are reading about, the things that we are examining in your word in the book of Revelation are things that are the true outcome, the just recompense of what this world deserves. And Father, thank you again for your grace and for your mercy. Father, thank you for deliverance from your wrath, whether we're dealing with the eternal or temporal. Father, thank you for your grace and for your mercy. And Father, I pray that we would be diligent in warning people of the wrath to come, again, temporal or eternal. Father, they might be saved. We pray for Christ's sake. Amen.